Welcome to The Human Beat. I'm Roger Rocca. By now, nearly all of us have seen photos or videos of the islands of plastic garbage in the ocean. Where does it come from? What harm does it do? And what can we do about it? To learn about some answers to those questions, we're talking today to Mark Ward, the founder of Sea Turtles Forever. Thanks for joining us, Mark.
Thanks for having me on The Human Beat, Roger. I appreciate the opportunity to raise awareness to the threat of our marine microplastic issue.
Well, tell us a little bit about you first, Mark, a little about your background and how you became involved in this.
Well, I was studying environmental science at Portland State University, and I went on a jungle expedition to Costa Rica, Central America, and discovered rampant poaching taking place of marine turtles in their nests in a very secluded area that I went to, rural and secluded beaches that were being 100% poached of every single turtle nest and a lot of adult nesting turtles. And I was asked by the largest marine conservation NGO, President Randall Arauz, in Central America to form an anti-poaching team there in that rural area and try and stop the poaching. Well, I trained an anti-poaching team, and I'm a self-defense instructor and a martial arts instructor, and so I have a lot of self-defense experience, and we had to stand up to some very determined poachers. And I trained a team of Costa Ricans, so it wouldn't be gringos trying to counter Costa Rican nationals. And now we have a team of six highly trained anti-poaching patrollers on the beach. But we're very holistic in our approach to protecting sea turtles as far as environment is one top priority. Because even if we're protecting the turtles, if their habitat and environment is destroyed, then there will be no sustainability for them into the future.
Mm-hmm. So part of your focus is still in Costa Rica, and part of your focus is here in the U.S. working in Oregon and California, right?
Oh, yeah, the nesting season in Costa Rica is about 7 months. So we run our anti-poaching team down there during the nesting season. But one of the greatest threats to marine turtles, maybe greater in the long run than even poaching, is marine microplastic. Mm-hmm. We've seen huge die-offs of marine turtles, sea turtles, from ingestion of marine microplastics, up to 100 at a time of endangered species landing on the beach dead, full of up to a kilo of microplastic each in their system.
Well, tell us a little more about microplastics, because we've seen these videos and photos of the floating garbage in the ocean and the plastics in the ocean. But microplastics are like a subset of that, right?
Yes, but the North Pacific Central Gyre is what you're talking about, and just north of Hawaii, 1,000 miles off California. And that is like having a enormous monster in the middle of the ocean that is killing and poisoning our entire marine food web. Mm-hmm. There are also other polluted gyres in every ocean. So I actually was just hired by Captain Charles Moore, who discovered that gyre. And I was on his research vessel in California for a few days with him, and was hired to deliver our filtration system and train his team to use the filtration system in Long Beach, California. But I got to talk to him quite a bit about the gyre, and he's the world's leading expert on that gyre. He's actually headed out there right now. Mm-hmm. For I think it's his 14th mission to research that body of plastic.
Now, are microplastics a part of that? Are they formed from that? I mean, where do the microplastics come from? And how do they differ from the stuff we actually can see?
The bulk of that mass would be microplastics. That mass is not just at the surface. It extends 300 feet down into the water column. So it's more like a giant soup, mm-hmm, than an island. The larger plastics are floating at the surface still, you know, bottles, different larger items, they float, but everything in that gyre, everything plastic that ever enters the ocean, eventually becomes microplastic. And so,
because it breaks down, it's grinding against one another and so on. Is that what happens?
Yeah, it, UV light releases a lot of the plasticizers and the softeners, and then the plastics become brittle. And then mechanical action of the ocean and all of that material smashing together breaks it into particles. And then those particles keep disintegrating down to the size of dust, of which we're finding a lot in the environment now. Captain Moore has done an incredible amount of research on that aspect of this, and one of his big complaints is that now there's microplastic in his beer.
Yeah. So the smaller it becomes, in a way, the more dangerous it becomes.
It has an easier time contaminating our water.
Right.
And there's nothing more important than water. 5 to 7 days without water and you're dead. We can go without food for 20 days, but water is the most important resource on the planet. And the microplastics are threatening that resource.
Well, in terms of the sea creatures, though, I think the smaller it gets, the more likely it is that they're going to ingest it and so on.
Absolutely.
Including the turtles.
There's been quite a bit of research on that, and we're finding that microplastic dust in zooplankton, the base of the marine food web.
So once it's in those creatures, and then into fish, and so on, into it, then it's into us as well as we consume those foods.
That is why I work so hard on this, because there are a lot of toxins in the ocean. The ocean is downstream from everywhere on the planet. Everything ever put on the planet eventually ends up in the ocean, as far as chemicals, contaminants. And so everything ends up in the ocean. Well, in the ocean, it's highly dilute because it's a massive body of water. So all those chemicals are very dilute. There's no real pathway back to us when they're just highly dilute in the water. But now these microplastics are creating what's called an environmental pathway right back to us and to all the other life in the ocean, because the microplastics have the ability to absorb and concentrate those contaminants at sea through the broken edges. And they will, I co-authored a paper on this with Tokyo University. And I worked with Hisashi Hirai and Hidetsuji Takada at Tokyo University and Captain Charles Moore. And we sampled 144 sites in 41 countries. Then did the lab work in Tokyo to identify the toxicity of those microplastics. Now, they absorb every toxin in the ocean and store it at over a million times background. And some of the ones that we identify on the beach are PCBs, PAHs, PDE-209, PBDE, and DDT. You know, they're some of the worst chemicals ever created. Well, those microplastics concentrate them at really high levels. And therefore, if you when a marine creature, a fish, zooplankton, whale, sea turtle, when they ingest those microplastics, the surfactants in their stomach and their digestive tract release the toxins, and then the toxins enter their flesh, their tissue. So that's a direct pathway back to us.
Now, you're sampling all over the world and you're finding these pollutants. Does that apply to plastics as well? Are they all over the world in the oceans?
Yes, and it's getting worse and worse and worse. That's why it's such a large threat. It's not like, hey, now we've banned the bag or we've banned straws and it's slowing down. It isn't slowing down. There's more microplastic every year because everything plastic, excuse me, in those gyres becomes microplastic. So every year, more and more of it becomes microplastic. And the microplastic is the major threat because it can be ingested by so many creatures, so many marine animals, fish, turtles, dolphins, killer whales, seabirds. You know, one of NOAA's estimates is 1 million seabirds a year die from ingesting microplastics. So our marine food web is under attack, and we depend on that for jobs, for food, for recreation. We depend greatly on that marine food web.
Well, even though your organization is Sea Turtles Forever, part of the work you're doing is benefiting all creatures, not just sea turtles. I mean, what you're doing in Costa Rica is focused pretty much on protecting the turtles from poaching. But the plastics work is really affecting everyone.
You know, and that is the benefit of our work has really taken legs because, you know, I was really focused on researching microplastics because we were finding it in all our turtles. So I started learning more and more about microplastics. And then after the research in Tokyo, it was like a light went on. This is a threat to every creature in the ocean, and it's also a threat to us because now there's an environmental pathway back to us through our marine food web. But that's not the only environmental pathway. The other environmental pathway is beach landfall, because now what we're seeing in the last 6 years or so, you know, what we're doing with the microplastics here in Oregon is we monitor landfall densities and we monitor contaminants. We've developed a system where we do our square meter surveys of the beach, and then we fuse that data with the data from Tokyo University on toxicity. And so we can monitor what kind of a PCB load is in the beach, mm-hmm. what kind of a PBDE, PAH, all these different chemicals. We can monitor how much of that is in the beach.
Well, before we get into work on the beaches, can you shed some light on where does all this stuff come from? Why is all this plastic out in the ocean? What's happening? What are we doing wrong?
Any piece of plastic that goes in a river or a stream works its way down to the ocean. And, you know, there's a number of different ways for plastic to enter the ocean. But, you know, if it's blown on the freeway by the river, if it's thrown on the freeway by a river, it can blow into the river and it heads downstream and ends up in the ocean. But what we're finding from current, you know, real recent research, and National Geographic did half of their last issue on this subject, and research that they collected from around the world. And what we're seeing is the bulk of this material entering the oceans is coming from Southeast Asia, India, China, and Africa, mm-hmm. and South America. And these are less developed countries that have less infrastructure, you know, where the world's largest populations are, too. You know, in America, we've been doing better. You know, we've been doing a lot better. People are becoming aware. You know, I go to Idaho and I talk to people about this. They have no idea what I'm talking about. Right. I go down to California, everybody knows what I'm talking about. Everybody understands. Because when you live by the ocean, you're way more sensitive to it. But as overall, America is only contributing maybe 10 to 20% of the inflow of plastics at this point. So we're doing better. That's still a lot of plastic. Mm-hmm. But globally, on a global level, we have done well. You know, we're leading the world. And it's really a UN issue. If we don't work on a global basis, there's no hope.
Yeah. Well, from what I understand from your website, we have kind of a larger accumulation of those microplastics on our beaches here than you would expect. Well, why is that?
Well, it's just, you know, the same reason why Oregon is such a great place for beachcombing. You know, we've always been famous for beachcombing. You know, glass floats from Japan.
Right.
The currents in the North Pacific circulate in a clockwise rotation around the Pacific Rim. So everything from Philippines and Japan is circling in that current. And the Philippines was, you know, has a real issue. Amazing amount of plastic entering the ocean in the Philippines. Mm-hmm. Well, that plastic can end up right here on our beach. You know, and the other thing about the gyre, I want to go back a little bit here, with the gyre, this giant, massive cloud, mm-hmm. soup of plastic, larger than the state of Texas and 300 feet deep plus, mm-hmm. is circulating out there, and in massive clouds of microplastic will break off of that and then enter that current circling the Pacific Rim. And it turns a corner right up here about the Washington border, you know, or a little bit north, you know, there's, and it heads down our coast. And everything lands here.
And there are certain beaches where it tends to accumulate more than others because of those currents?
Yeah, and that's due to, you know, local geography and local currents that we have found higher densities at some locations than others. And we try and target those high-density areas with our filtration, because if we go into a high-density area and we filter, we can remove a lot of microplastic. You know, we go into a low-density area and filter, we only remove a little. So we focus our resources on those high-density sites that we've identified do our work there first.
In doing the beach work, you also need help. You need people to come out.
We have had a lot of, you know, volunteers. We can use volunteers on this beach work. It's fun work. I actually love it myself because I'm getting ripped. I mean, you go out there and you run those screens. It's low impact. You run the screen. It's a low impact exercise. And you do about 6 hours of that a day. You, a couple weeks later, you are tightening up. Your upper body just feels great. I enjoy that and I appreciate that.
Well, describe what you do. Now, you recently were cleaning up the beach down around Cannon Beach, as I recall. So what is it you do when you...
Well, I've trained 1,000 volunteers over the last few years. Because we have large groups come from Portland. We've got kind of busloads of people come from Portland, schools. A lot of people in the valley, in the Central Valley, have helped. We get some people from the local area, but not as many. We've actually had more volunteers from the Central Valley because they want to learn about this issue. They hear about it. They want to learn about it. They find me on the internet. They call, you know, we'd like to volunteer. They come. But we have a paid core team of 6 people because we can't always depend on volunteers. A lot of them, you know, they'll come, we'll train them. It's running the filters. You need to be trained to run those properly to be at top efficiency. So we'll have volunteers come down and we'll train them, but then they might not come back.
Well, you're talking about the filters. Now, that's your invention.
Yeah, I invented that system.
Now, how do they work? What do you do?
That system is really incredible. I've been shipping them all over the world, Australia to England, Canada to Costa Rica, all up and down the East Coast, the Great Lakes, Spain. Portugal. I shipped to Portugal this year. ExxonMobil has bought the filtration system. They're using it in the Gulf Coast. That system is incredible. It's a low-cost, simple system, but it works incredibly efficiently because it's a polymer screen, develops a low electrostatic charge when you're running it, and therefore we've found that it will collect the dust. Mm-hmm. The smallest particles will bond to that electrostatic charge in the screen. So we're removing everything you can see out of the beach, any of those small chips that are impossible to handpick. We remove all of that. But we also get a lot of particles you can't even see that are dust size. And that's the stuff the zooplankton are eating.
Mm-hmm. So you're shoveling the top layer of sand and putting it in this filter.
It's a manual operation.
And then shaking the sand through.
It's not shaking. We're rolling it.
Mm-hmm.
And therefore it's brushing up and down against that screen so that electrostatic charge can form and work.
So the sand goes through, but the plastic stay on the screen.
And a little bit of the sand will be attracted by the electrostatic charge. So we do collect a small amount of sand in our samples and in our work, very small amount. But what we found in that sand that we're collecting, Clatsop Community College did a really nice research project. Dr. Bunch was working with us for a few years, and he was actually on our board of directors at one time, but... we did a microscopic analysis of the sand that we were collecting in those samples and found that up to 20% of it was actually plastics dust, the size of sand. So you look at 100 grams of sand that we've collected in our filters, and 20 grams of it would be plastic dust,
mm-hmm.
the size for the zooplankton can ingest. That was when kind of a shocking moment because we realized how much dust is actually in the beach. And it's also contaminated.
How long does it take for the volunteers and your staff to work over a beach like you just did?
That really depends. We just completed a filtration of Whale Park in Cannon Beach. And now that beach had a layer of microplastic covering the entire beach. We normally don't experience that widespread of coverage with microplastics. Most beaches we go to, there might be a 5 meter wide band at the back of the beach where 99.9% of the plastics are concentrated into that band. And we can just go through real fast with the filters moving down the beach. Well, Whale Park this year was a lot different. The entire area was covered with microplastic all the way up to buildings on the dune, all the dune area. The whole, all the way down to the high tide, the summer high tide line, it's a lot lower because it was all brought in on those king tides. Mm-hmm. Well, the whole beach had to be filtered. It was an enormous job, but we turned that beach. It was bad. You dig down 3 or 4 inches in the plastic, and I see hundreds of children digging down there every day. I mean, maybe not every day, but they actually have a sandcastle contest there every Monday, and there would be scores of children every day digging in that beach. And you dig down 3 or 4 inches and you hit a solid mat of microplastic. I would not want my 2 or 3 year old to be exposed to that. But we went through there and filtered that entire beach with my 6-man team and turned it back into the most fluffy, pure sand you've ever seen. It's really amazing. It's kind of exciting to run those filters and see, you know, leave this trail of just the most pristine sand you've ever seen behind you.
I think you've said, too, that even building a fire on the beach with the plastics and the sand is dangerous.
Well, it should be kind of obvious that, you know, just burning regular plastic is relatively toxic, right? Mm-hmm. And I see from doing our survey work, I've surveyed all the way down to Port Orford, from Long Beach, Washington, to Port Orford, I ran a survey. And in those rack lines where the microplastics is concentrated, I see fire after fire after fire after fire right in that rack line, mm-hmm. where you're on top of this mat of contaminated microplastic. Regular plastic is relatively toxic to burn. You don't want to be breathing that. But this microplastic is packed with PCBs, PAHs, BDE-209, a whole 200 different chemicals.
Right.
They're you know, names you can't even pronounce. The normal, a regular person can't pronounce, okay? But you've got these hundreds of these chemicals concentrated into that mat, and these are carcinogenic, and they're neurodisruptors, endocrine disruptors. There's a whole range of different effects on the human body. And if you build a fire there on top of that mat, and you've got your little kids down there cooking a hot dog or something, God help you.
Yeah.
It's really a bad thing. And I see that everywhere. It's, you know, we try and focus our energies where the most people go, and they're going to be doing that.
Yeah.
You know, like Whale Park is really heavily used. And so we focused all our efforts initially on Whale Park. And, you know, we don't have enough resources at this point. We need more resources really badly. We'd like to filter. We also work in Manzanita. And we filtered the entire beach there a few years ago. We had a grant and a little bit of funding, but we're pretty much constantly underfunded.
Yeah.
And
well, what this brings us to, what can people do? This seems like such a huge problem. You can feel helpless, but obviously, you found something that can be done about it. What can people do?
Well, you know, our system. We can take with my six-man team. We can take the worst contaminated beach, and we can turn it into absolute pristine sand again.
Mm-hmm.
So by supporting our STF Blue Wave, Sea Turtles Forever, you're helping in a big way to restore beaches to pristine states.
And you have a website, seaturtlesforever.org, right?
That's it, yeah.
So people can learn more and can also contact you through that website?
Oh, yeah, and you can donate to the Blue Wave Project, the beach filtration, on that website. My phone number's on there. You can call and talk to me. My email's on there. You can email me, and I communicate with hundreds of people. And there's other things you can do too, though. You know, besides helping support our team, our core team, you can come and volunteer and get ripped like me and have fun at the beach and have a great day and feel neurological benefits from this that it's hard to describe how good you feel after you know that you've just taken that contaminated stretch of beach and turned it into this pristine environment.
Yeah.
It's incredibly satisfying. It's a huge neurologic benefit that I notice in everybody that works with me. They come up to me. I've had some of them come up in tears because they're so overjoyed at what we just did. And we just saved their beach. We've been really focused on Cannon Beach because we have huge support there. Dragonfire Art Gallery. We call this operation this year Operation Dragonfire because they've done an incredible job of supporting our team financially with donations mm-hmm. and keeping us on the beach. The City of Cannon Beach Parks and Rec, they gave us a small grant. That's helped keep us on the beach. But Dragonfire has been incredible. And if we had more sponsors like that, we could just keep running all summer. And we could go from, wherever our sponsors say, hey, I'd like you to do this beach, we could do that. If we had more businesses like Dragonfire Art Gallery. But we've also had sponsorship from The Ways Motel, Bruce's Candy Kitchen, the Scenic Surf, Web Scenic Surf. They've given us small, donations. A few hundred dollars, and that's really helped. Keeping us on the beach is the most important thing. Mm-hmm. Keep my team on the beach, filtering, and we're getting something done every day. And they have to be paid. You can't just come down and volunteer. You can come down and volunteer for something for a couple of days. I volunteer all the time. But you have to support yourself and pay right. your bills. So these people are working day after day after day.
Right.
We have to have a paid team if we want to get that done. The other ways people can help besides donating, sponsoring, volunteering on the beach with my team, the other way that people can really help is by reducing your plastic consumption is a key to this. We have got to reduce our plastic consumption. When I go to the store, I look for wax cardboard for my juice bottles. I look for glass for my peanut butter jar. I look for tin if I can. I stay away. I refuse to take single-use plastic bags. You use them for 15 minutes and they're done. Billions of them go out. I focus on trying to reduce my plastic consumption. That's super important.
Well, Mark Ward of Sea Turtles Forever, thanks very much for helping us understand this problem. And again, the website is seaturtlesforever.org. You've been listening to The Human Beat. My name is Roger Rocca. Thanks for being with us.